You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is episode 8 of Stable Riding with Solange. This is Solange Ellis, founder of Stable Riding, and this is episode 8 of Stable Riding with Solange, part of Horses in the Morning. I am here the fourth Tuesday of every month to talk to you all about the rider and how we can make ourselves better in the saddle. I decided to apply to be a presenter and a clinician at Equine Affair in August of 2023 with the hope that I would be accepted to the Columbus event in 2024. This was going to be the big unveiling of my stable riding system. I'd been using all the principles of my system to teach riders for 24 years at that point, but had not formally launched it and branded it the way I have now. Being located in Hinckley, Ohio, I'm just a short two-hour drive from Columbus, and I considered myself really lucky that I happened to live so close to one of the country's largest horse expos. I remember speaking to Kogi, the president of Equine Affair, on the phone, and she seemed pretty interested. So the next step was filling out all the forms for the event, the booth application, as well as the presenter forms for my clinics. I remember my team and I spent six hours filling out those forms. I still to this day wonder if anyone else has ever put that much thought into a handful of forms. But we were serious. We really wanted to make sure that we presented ourselves well and were accepted into the event. This was a big deal, the launch of my riding system. A few weeks later, I find myself listening to the voicemail saying I was accepted as a presenter. I was so shocked and excited that I ended up sitting down on one of the jump blocks in my indoor arena and thinking, this is one of those moments in my life. This is one of those moments that's going to change everything. I told my team, and it was officially go time. We began having what we would call our Equine Affair war room meetings in my kitchen. We started in December, I think, and we had one a month every month up to the event. These involved everything from planning out my intro to the clinics to how we were going to run the booth, where we were going to put the equisizers, and what kind of business cards we'd have. It was a lot of work, but it was also a lot of fun. I even ended up booking myself little practice clinics in my indoor arena where I would ask a group of my riders to come in and play act as clinic riders for me. This let me practice my opening speech, my closing remarks. I even had other students come in and act as the audience to give me feedback. We prepared for Equine Affair like we were going to the Oscars. Because for us and the rest of the horse world, it kind of is. These events are a tremendous deal, and there's not very many of them. I can say with great certainty that the incredibly hard work that my team put in and all the preparation we did really paid off. That first Columbus event could not have been any better. My very first clinic that I taught was full of riders and the stands were packed. I was really just hoping that some people would come and watch. And not only were the stands full, but people were standing along the rail lining up to watch my clinic. And that was a really great feeling. It was so validating that people were interested in rider stability, and their presence gave me a lot of confidence for the remainder of the event. That first year, we had just a double booth with two equisizers in it, and we were overrun with people who wanted to try our equisizers and have a stability check. To continue our luck that year, we won Best Booth Award. This was a big deal, and I was so happy that we did it. But honestly, I was really happy and excited for my team who put in so much work and so much effort planning and manning the booth. This win went on to really help my fledgling social media presence, and it got me my first podcast interview on, you guessed it, right here, Horses in the Morning. Equine Affair has their very own episodes, and they interviewed me as their Best Booth Award winner. I like to think that that first little introduction to Horse Radio Network and Horses in the Morning started the thread of events that led me to having this very podcast that I'm speaking to you on now. When I look back over the connections of my life and my business through the horse world, it's always interesting to see how these relationships weave together and create opportunities. The equine affair events are now some of the main things that our lives here at the barn rotate around. We're either getting ready for one or we're talking about the next one. I am deeply grateful to the event organizers for providing the platform that they have to give people in the horse industry a chance to present themselves and interact with riders. Next up, before we knew it was November 2024, and it was time for us to drive out to the Massachusetts event. I had 3 clinics and 2 demos in 2 days. It was a whirlwind and a lot of fun. I think I ate at least 2 frozen bananas on sticks dipped in chocolate and nuts. They were really good. I'd not been to the Massachusetts event before, so it was interesting to see a whole new group of riders. When you're a clinician for Equine Affair, riders apply to ride with you through the Ride a Pro program. Once all the applications are in, the clinician gets to read them all and view attached videos and photos. This is fabulous for me as it mirrors my standard practice. Whenever I travel and teach outside of my home facility, I ask for a call with the riders ahead of time, plus photos and videos. This gives me a big jump start on the data I need to do my diagnostic work and allows me to give that rider the best help possible when we are together. As soon as the Ride a Pro programs opened, I received an email from a rider who wanted to book a ride in my clinic at the event and was interested in a phone call. And that, dear listener, is how I met Her Royal Highness Alex. As soon as she answered the phone, she told me in her amazing British accent, "I heard your interview on Horses in the Morning," and I looked to my husband and said, "This woman doesn't know it yet, but she's going to change my life." No pressure, right? Thankfully, Alex is a rider who embodies many of the qualities that I specialize in. She's a fox hunter, a rider with a very long and complex riding history, as well as a complex body history. She's also a light seat rider who is lacking a deep seat. These are all things I'm really well versed in. So while I wasn't entirely sure I could be life-changing, I did know I could really help, and that I'd probably just met my new best friend. Every time I talk, and I'll probably say it today, I go, "Alex, we should get married. Imagine the ponies we'd have." About a month later, I'd made my decision from a really interesting pool of riders, and my clinics were full. I was able to teach Alex and her fairy tale perfect Connemara pony Sam at the event. And from that one clinic, Alex decided to come to my farm for a 3-day intensive in the spring of 2025. Alex has a really interesting riding history, so I knew she would be the perfect guest for the special Equine Affair edition of Stable Riding with Solange. Alex, hello, hello. Thank you for joining the pod.
Oh, I'm so flattered to be here. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. This is going to be great. I can tell this is going to be really good. We're going to have a lot of fun.
I hope so.
Do you remember reaching out to me that very first time? Because I remember it was because you heard the Equine Affair Horses in the Morning podcast episode where I got interviewed because I had Best Booth Award. Isn't that how you heard about me?
And that's exactly right. I immediately went on and found the link from the show notes, and I emailed you immediately.
I remember that.
Because, so do I, actually.
Because I was turning around my 6-horse trailer and I was talking to you in my earbuds, and I thought that your accent was absolutely fabulous because I'm married to an Englishman. And then you said...
No, you're married to a Welshman, and that's completely different.
He grew up in Anglesey, but he identifies as UK. But I remember you said, "I heard your podcast," and I turned and looked at my husband and said, "This woman doesn't know it yet, but she's going to change my life." Do you remember saying that to me? I'll never forget.
I absolutely do, because you were talking in my little world sense, and I've got to do this. It's urgent.
I still think we should just get married and live on a farm with ponies. I think we can make a go of it, Alex.
I think what has to be said here is our height difference.
It's only like a foot, right?
Give or take, yep.
Okay, yes, we have to be serious an interview now.
Very difficult. Go on.
Are you willing to tell the listeners how old you are now and how old you were when you started riding?
Yes, I'm very happy to do that, but my age is not relevant to what my head thinks it is. In my head, okay, I'm about 25, and then my body keeps telling me I'm 66. And I started riding, I don't actually know, very, very young, 18 months or so. I was just,
right, just chucked on a pony as a toddler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody, well, I would ride, you know, anybody's horse that was hitched to a carriage, anything that would I would be allowed to be put on, I was put on.
Yeah, that's the way my kid was. And as soon as she could hold her head up, I started sticking her on horses and any piece of farm machinery or excavation equipment that had a picture of a baby with a line and a circle through it. That's when I put my kid on. I'm like, this will be good for her. This will really toughen her up. Okay. Can you, first of all, can you tell us about your horse, the amazing Sam? He looks like a fairy tale pony, like he should have wings. He's so cute.
Yeah, he is very, very cute to look at and should have a unicorn horn and that
he
long
should.
Flowing
that
mane.
Glitters. There should be glittering.
I have done fancy dress like that, but he's a pony. So yes, he definitely has a personality.
If he doesn't, he loses his pony card. The pony police comes and takes his pony card away.
Yeah, well, that's never going to happen with him.
I love Sam. And if he's ever missing, no one come look at my house because he won't. He won't be here.
I've always known that.
Okay, we're both fox hunters. And here is a little sneak peek, everybody. My next episode is actually a fox hunting episode, so stay tuned. But I have to ask you, Alex, what I ask all fox hunters. What about the sport do you love? For me, I love that it's different every time. That's what I love about fox hunting. What do you love about fox hunting?
I think that's true. But for so many reasons, it's different every time. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've been fox hunting since a very small child. Mm-hmm. And it's several things. Seeing different bits of countryside, private land that you would never get access to,
yes,
in another way. That is the beauty of it. I love watching the hounds work. I love the horses and the excitement and freedom of being sort of with a group but on your own. Mm-hmm. Is incredibly exciting, and I think I probably like that near death experience it gives you.
It really gets the blood flowing, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
What is your past experience with Equine Affair? Have you ridden in clinics there before? Do you go regularly? Tell us about your Equine Affair history.
When I moved to Western Mass, which is where I am now, which is very, mm-hmm, it's about an hour and a bit away from the Springfield one, mm-hmm, my then new to me husband had been working at Equine Affair since its inception.
Oh,
and
so cool.
Yeah, so he told me all these stories and off we went for the first time. And I've gone every year except for the COVID years since.
That's incredible. Now
it's really good. And I did a side saddle demonstration one year.
I was gonna say,
because
you've done all kinds of stuff. Because some people go and they don't take their horse, and some people go and they do take their horse. And some people go and come home with a horse.
All of the above.
A little bit, mm-hmm, of everything at the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I rode in several of them. And I love the shopping. Who doesn't?
Yes. Doesn't everybody love the shopping? And, I love anywhere I can get a funnel cake.
I'm not going to go there with you because I saw somebody in your booth eating a pickled pizza.
Yeah.
Which sounds
like us.
Yeah. But I do. I feel that, you know, the other thing is it's one of those places you bump into people you don't see all year, or you've,
yes,
seen them all summer and then not
totally
seen them. And it's like, mm-hmm, wow. Mm-hmm. So all of those things I really like.
Are you willing to tell the story of how you lost your confidence in your riding?
Yeah, oh God, if you've got a few million hours. Yeah, I'm quite happy to talk about that. It's something that has almost been my dirty little secret for years and years, because I could hide it very well for a while. Mm-hmm. I had basically, because I had no money, I was riding everybody else's rubbish horses. Mm-hmm. And so that really didn't help. But I had a series of pretty serious accidents. I broke my back the first time when I was 21, and I have carried on injuring just about every part of my body ever since. Mm-hmm. And I've also had a couple of joint replacements because I have the arthritis gene. But then, 10, 11 years ago, I had a very serious accident, which I ended up 10 days in ICU. I had to learn to walk again, mm-hmm. which if you talk to my husband, he will tell you some very funny stories about. And I thought I was okay when mm-hmm. I finally got, because of course I went straight back as soon as I could.
Of course. But
then I suddenly realized I was riding with the park brake on.
Right.
And it basically got worse and worse. And then we checked, you know, I bought another horse and it was better. And then it would go again for no reason, to the point where it was very, very difficult for me to ride at all. Mm-hmm. And I hated myself.
Oh.
Hated myself. Because to me, the horses define me. That's what I live for. That's what I get up for every
right.
morning.
Yes, yes.
So it was really bad. And I have since found out that because I had this brain hemorrhage, I also broke my back and dislocated my spine, and I did all sorts of wonderful things at the same time. But it happened coincidentally about the same time as I hit menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward several years to actually the end of last year, I didn't think anything of it. And then I found some research and information that told out of England that told me that 60% of women, when they reach menopausal age, stop riding.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I thought, perhaps it's that. So I read all the research and spoke to this Dr. Louise Newsome in England. And although she's not a horse person, she's a menopause expert. And she mm-hmm. was just saying, and the interesting thing is, not a horse person, but she said, do you know any middle-aged women who have the most beautiful horses? Their stables are immaculate, the horse is immaculate, all their equipment is immaculate, and they never get on the horse. And I said, all my life I've known those women.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
But when there's a piece of validated, you know, published research that actually says 60% of women tend to stop mm-hmm. riding around menopause, it was too much of a coincidence. So, yeah, very bad accident. And yeah, that's where I was up to. But the trouble with it was I would not give up. So I kept pulling I've got a lot of horses. I would pull them out, get on, sit on, get off, put it away.
Right.
But you know, I got on. And the interesting thing is we're actually breaking a few ponies at the time, and I could get on those, but I couldn't right. actually move.
Right.
So yep. And yeah, that was about where I was up. Well, I just got Sam when I called you.
I wrote down a couple of things while you were telling your story. And the first thing I want to say is thank you for telling it, because this is something that happens in some degree to anyone who ever rides. And we have shame about it, so we don't talk about it. And that prohibits us from helping each other through it, which also sounds a little bit like menopause, a little bit.
You know I'm going to guide you through that.
Sounds like a common thread here. Yeah, I'm going to call you and be like, Alex, what do I do? It's everything you said has been something that I have seen or heard so many riders going through. They do hide it for a while, right? I always tell my fearful riders who are in an anxious or a low confidence phase of their riding that admittance is the first step on the road to recovery. You have to say, dude, I'm scared. And I go, okay, well, what are you scared about? We need to talk about this, because just talking about it and highlighting exactly what the problem is allows me as a professional to provide you with solutions, but we have to name it first. And if we're always embarrassed or afraid of it, then we never name it, and then we never access tools, and then we quit riding. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
That's not what we want to have happen. I think too that considering the severity and the sort of grouping frequency of the injuries that you sustained, it is more than natural, normal, and should be expected and anticipated that you would come back from an injury of that nature and have an emotional effect from that kind of injury. You know, and this is where the cowboy up cavalry mentality of kind of the old school traditional horsemanship does us a disservice, because pull your big girl panties on and get back on the horse, cowboy up, quit whining, put your mind in the middle works sometimes, but most of the time it doesn't. And in an instance like this, it really doesn't work, because you get stuck in a loop, because you're just trying to keep pushing yourself through without changing anything. And then you get stuck sitting on ponies, but not riding them, you know?
Yeah. And obviously what's just occurred to me as you were saying that, this is the denial that goes along with substance use disorder. Mm-hmm. You know, people, they hide it, they lie. Mm-hmm. And I mean, mm-hmm. I definitely was not I knew it, and I was saying to my husband, but saying it to anybody else was really difficult, especially when people were coming to me saying, well, you've done this, you've done that, you could do this.
Well,
not anymore.
This is when I say riders with a complex riding history. You don't really remember when you started riding, you know, which is like my kid. She doesn't remember learning to ride. She vaguely remembers when I explained to her how to canter. She kind of remembers when I taught her how to jump, but it's something that you do your whole life. And when you have, 65 years of practice doing something, it's a big ball of wax to kind of untangle. And it's hard sometimes to find a professional who's suited to help you with what you're doing, but also you have to vibe with them. They have to pass the vibe check. You have to be willing to talk to them about something like this, and that can make it more difficult to access the help that you need, because you have to feel comfortable telling somebody like the truthy truth and feeling like that person's not going to judge you.
That's exactly right. It's very, very embarrassing to do. And believe me, I tried just about everything that you can think of, like drinking. Drinking was good. That worked. But I tried hypnosis, I tried acupuncture, I tried therapy, I read every book, downloaded every document, because of the importance for me that riding has.
Yeah, you weren't going to give this up.
I wasn't. I still can't.
I don't think you should.
I don't either.
I think you
so
should.
So I'll just go and buy another. I'll just go and buy another pony.
Okay, that sounds great. Can I come back?
Yeah, I'm actually going at the end of the month. So yeah.
I remember you telling me after you rode in my clinic at Equina Fair that my yellow wellies gave you pause. But other than my boot choices, how was your experience not only in my clinic, but especially in all the other clinics that you rode with that year with Sam?
Well, it was really your clinic, and I will tell you a very brief story about that. So I don't know whether you remember, but we were riding around the arena and there was blue cans for trash all the way around, and the little bugger was spooking everyone, not badly, but he was spooking.
Being a pony, ponying it up.
So I'm gonna then cut to what happened the next day and then come back, if that's okay, because what happened the next day, I was in the main pavilion at the place, which is very loud, very noisy, overhead speakers, yes, people wandering through. And I was in there the next day with Sam representing Connemara's, which was a big responsibility for me. And I was absolutely terrified because I thought, oh God, he's spooking anything here. What on earth is he going to be like? And that I'm going to die. Long story short, he was fine. He was absolutely fine. I felt confident. At one point, we're cantering around. I'm thinking, this is all right. I didn't like the other horses, but that's irrelevant. But there was a night and day difference between my riding. I wasn't sitting there thinking, what's going to happen next to cause me to die?
Yeah.
So that was the most wonderful thing, thanks to doing the clinic the day before. But I liked the clinic because it was very, very practical. It was basically, this is to help you remain safe in the saddle, because some of my fear is I'm going to fall off and hurt myself, because historically...
Because you have fallen off and hurt yourself. Like, that's not a crazy leap that your mind's going to post-fallen injury.
Exactly. You know? So it was that. And it was, I also like the simplicity of it, which I hope is not an insult to you.
No, that is a huge compliment, because I work very hard to make it very simple.
And also, you are very good at finding the right words, so that whoever you are teaching, I mean, there were six of us in that clinic, you were altering your vocabulary to suit the individual, which is an amazing skill in my book.
Yes. I feel that personally I was lucky. I always tell people I have a facility for language. I think I was born with it. I know my husband was not.
He's a man. What do you expect?
Yeah. But it's teachers are just professional speakers. You know, it's communicating for points. So understanding how to pitch to your audience is really, really important, especially when someone's in a heightened emotional state and in public. I mean, it takes a lot of bravery for a rider to haul their horse to an event and then clinic and be taught in public by somebody who's mic'd up. So I give all my riders who come to the clinics a lot of props and a lot of respect for being willing to learn publicly, because learning is often just a series of quick failures in a row. You try this and you go, oh, not quite, do it again. Oh, not quite, do it again. So to being willing to learn in public takes a certain kind of personality, and I'm always very grateful for riders who are willing to do it.
The other thing, and I got more when I came and did the intensive, was that you could say to me, normally laughing, which is the best way to deal with me.
I laugh that, a lot. There's a lot of laughing in my life, yeah.
Well, you know, I'd rather that than crying. But you were very good at explaining the biomechanics of how the body works. You know, this is going, A plus B is falling off and breaking your neck. Right. And that actually made it resonate. You know, or stay with me for much longer. That, you know,
listeners,
all that was very
Alex
helpful.
Is the inventor of Piece of Pizza, when I tell my riders to put their feet in front of them and then widen them for both frontal and lateral support. Alex came in on day two with her notes and she wrote, look what I wrote down. She's like, piece of pizza, piece of pizza. And I'm looking at her like, what are we talking about? She's like, my feet, they look like a piece of pizza. And I have stolen it shamelessly and used it endlessly. So I'm publicly giving you full credit, Alex, for piece of pizza.
I really appreciate that, because I was going to sue you. But
you were going to be hearing from my lawyer.
The thing about it is all those things you did put in words that not only were comprehensible and easy to do, you know, like it was easy to put, oh, you want my feet in a pizza position? Yes, I know what you mean. You know, do this. Yeah. But the other thing was, you know, so you got almost a checklist in your head that you gave. I have a checklist in my head that you gave me, which says, this is what I need to be doing right now, not freaking out and getting
off. another line that I shamelessly stole from someone, and I don't remember who said it, so I can't give them public credit, but action is the enemy of anxiety.
Yep.
And
yep.
When you do something, your anxiety dissipates. So if you have a simple to go through flowchart or checklist, when you feel your anxiety rising, that specifically makes you more stable. Because I'm not saying that your prayer beads don't work, but if you can also pick your chin up and bring your hands back in your lap and lean back and put your feet in front of you, toes out, heels down, you're going to be so much more physically stable. And then your like your amygdala response is going to calm because you're like, oh yeah, I am actually going to not fall off. And that comes back to that thinking about what you're doing, not how you're doing, which is such a vital perception shift for riders to make.
But I, you know, that's me is quite a gem. Mm-hmm. What you just said was something like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, it's, you know, not, it's what the reality, not the perception.
Right. And I want you to leave with tools. I want everyone that I interact with, whether it's in person or if they see even like a short reel on Facebook or in something like this with the podcast, with the rider tips and homework, I always hope that they can leave with something actionable that they can use. And if anyone ever tries anything and they're like, what did that lady mean? You can always email me and ask me. But
yes, like, you are very accessible.
Yes, I try to be. Well, you totally led you me are. Into my next question already, Alex, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
I love going and doing different clinics and events that I get to teach at. And often when I'm at one of those events, a rider will choose to come see me for an intensive, which you did, right? Yep. In the early spring, just a few months after we met together at Equine Affair in Massachusetts, you came for a 3-day intensive in my lab and on my horses. And my specific question is, how did you like the lab and its tools? Because I really feel like I'm only able to do what I do now because I have my herd of equisizers.
It did change my riding. It hasn't mm-hmm. made me, oh, I'm so brave now, unfortunately. Right. But what it has done is exactly what you just said. And like, okay, I'm having a panic. Now what do I do? Mm-hmm. And you have given me a set of tools which start for me as stop. Don't wait. Now, yes. Where are your feet? Where mm-hmm. is your head? All mm-hmm. these things. But you broke it down with the equisizers in the lab. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I spent most of the first day learning how to get on.
Yes. I do a lot of mounting lessons. That year, 2025, Alex, I taught almost 50 hours of private one-on-one mounting and dismounting lessons. And I'm building a special mounting corner in the lab specifically to suit that curriculum because so many riders have pain or difficulty or fear mounting and dismounting.
Yeah, it was a very good jumping off point because mm-hmm, everything mm-hmm. followed on from that. And again, mm-hmm. going back to horses are great humblers, which we all know, you
the
know,
universal leveler. You know,
yep. How long have you been riding and you can't even get on properly? Good grief.
Yeah.
And actually added to that, I must just give you an aside. So I have now, since I saw you last, no, not, yes, yeah. since I saw you last, I have basically fallen off twice. Once was on the...
Once, great time once, to be breaking this news, Alex.
No, it isn't. It's good news. It's good news.
Okay.
Because all right. The first time I fell off a log trying to get on the pony because I had to stop to pick something up in the woods.
Is a log a safe and appropriate mounting block?
Oh, sure.
I'm going to have a picture with a circle with a line with a log now.
And the second time I came off was when I was dismounting.
Yeah.
So, like, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't had any falls since.
When I put my mounting series back up on Facebook, I'll tag you in it.
God. But it was really eye-opening and sort of surprising that, yeah. that going yeah. back to such a fundamental mm-hmm. skill actually taught me a lot more than how to get on my horse safely
it's
and
very helpful for anxious or nervous or low confidence riders because if you land correctly it sets the tone. If you land in yep. the saddle correctly it sets the tone for the ride. It's kind of like catching yep. the wave when you're surfing. So All right, Alex. Two more questions. Do you have two more questions on you?
Yes, of course. I'm good at talking.
What advice do you have for a rider who's going through a low confidence phase in their own riding?
For me, they need to just come and see you and that's the end of it.
Can't just be a commercial for me, Alex. You have to give them other things too.
Well, I think the other thing is talk to other people. Well, you'd be surprised how many other people will say it.
Yes.
You know, I've even heard professional riders.
Yes.
And I have seen professional riders throwing up before they went round badminton.
Oh, 100%.
You know, yes. Yeah. And so just seeing that makes you think, oh, maybe I'm not so wimpy. Even if I am having a panic attack at jumping a pole on the ground, it doesn't matter. That is the other thing is, look, you're riding. It doesn't matter whether you've been round Kentucky, badminton, wherever, and now you can't get through a walk trot dressage test. Take it back. You want to keep riding.
Meet yourself where you are.
I'm not going to tell anybody not to be ashamed because that's impossible, absolutely impossible. But I think it is find the person that understands the language you are talking. And I don't mean English. Mm-hmm. I mean the semantics, the vocabulary. Yes.
Totally.
Doesn't mind telling you 300 times exactly the same thing.
Well, and I talk about this a lot when I'm instructing because the last person to have a real riding system was Sally Swift with Centered Riding, right?
Yeah.
And she was mainly dressage and a little bit of jumping. And part of how she was sort of those two disciplines is what made me want to be non-discipline specific, hence my yellow wellies, because I didn't want to read a certain way and have somebody not, you know, if I'm in cowboy boots, the dressage lady weren't listening, blah, blah, blah. But everything Sally Swift said was right. And everything Sally Swift said, I agree with. She was giving really good sound appropriate biomechanical advice, but her way of communicating it was very poetic. And it was a lot of like, you're an oak tree and your leaves are going up and your roots are going down. And when you're an extended trot, it's like your hips are playing the grand piano. And that's just not the way my brain works. I'm like, I don't know, that doesn't land for me. Right. So finding someone who can help you, who speaks in the way that your brain hears is so much more helpful.
Yes, but as much as, you know, I am going to charge you for all this, what you have the ability to do that many other instructors don't have is meet the rider where they're at, especially with language and comprehension.
Right.
You know, because I think there's five different ways that we all learn differently. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be creative when you're teaching mathematics or riding or knitting, because no people don't think the same way as you do.
Anybody that ever needs to email me, listeners, you can email me. I will talk to you. I've decided to make this. This is my life's mission, is to stabilize riders. So. And I love doing it. I would talk to riders about their complex riding history, their complex body history, or the thing their horse is doing. I would do it all day. Teaching the intensives is my favorite thing to do. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
You are so welcome.
I do really appreciate it.
You are so welcome.
And I hope your story helps and inspires somebody. Man, I wish Alex and I lived closer to each other. This shenanigans would be for real. Maybe that's probably why we live so far apart. Equine Affair brings together so many different disciplines and breeds in one place. That's part of the magic and why I love working the show. I'm a huge supporter of people doing all sorts of things with their horses. I think the siloed nature of our culture is harming us. I tend to talk about disciplines like religions. Imagine you grow up in an Orthodox Jewish household your whole life, and then in your late 20s, you meet a friend who takes you to their deep Southern Baptist church. Now, things would be very different. Not bad, just different. And who knows, parts of it you might really enjoy. This is how I describe horses and all the different disciplines to riders new in the sport. Imagine you grow up in a serious Western pleasure barn, very low and slow. Your whole career, you ride high-level Western pleasure horses, heads down, true jog and lope, rarely if ever posting a trot. And then after a decade or so of that, some of your new friends take you to where their horses are, and they all endurance ride Arabians. Can you imagine? The strange saddles, bright tack, and high head carriage horses with huge trots that you have to stand some of the time. It would be bananas. My wish for riders is that they open their minds, try new things, and learn from the people, horses, and riders opposite from them. I think it will do us all a lot of good. Events like Equine Affair bring us all together in one place and allow us to do just that. You can ride in and audit a huge spectrum of clinics and events. I always say, in horses, our diversity makes us stronger. The Columbus Equine Affair is coming up fast, and I'll be there all 4 days, April 9th through 12th, in my usual booth, number 719. I will have 3 equisizers with me, and as always, I'm teaching my mini lessons and my stability checks in booth all 4 days. I'll have both an English and Western saddle on 2 equisizers all set up for the riders, and I'll have my mirrors and my green sticks and my yellow wellies. Come by and see me. I'm really hoping to meet some listeners in person at the event. For the rider tip and homework today, I'd like to talk about standing up in our stirrups. Standing walk is something I will often teach at a clinic or an event, as it's very beneficial for the rider, and all the horse needs to do is walk. I love a really helpful exercise for the rider that's minimum effort for the horse. This makes it accessible to all riders. Regardless of your breed or discipline, we can separate everybody's riding positions into 2 basic groups. Deep seat positions are where you remain sitting, and the goal is to keep your 2 seat bones in contact with the saddle or the horse's back the entire time. This can be in a saddle with the feet in or out of your stirrups, or bareback. Your deep seat positions would include sitting walk, sitting trot, and sitting canter. Your light seat positions are when your weight is in your stirrups. These positions are standing, posting, galloping, and jumping. The best way to get comfortable in any of these light seat positions is to start by simply standing. Standing is mainly a position I teach to help riders learn to use their stirrups to fully support themselves. It does have some real-world applications other than being a tool for instruction, but those tend to be very specific. Mounted archers need a good solid standing position to shoot their bows in. Long distance and endurance riders love having a true standing trot to access on long stretches. And anyone who jumps will be much safer if they choose to land off their fences in their feet and stirrups, as opposed to falling forward on their horse's neck. I find the horses appreciate it too. I like to introduce standing on an equisizer in my lab, as this lets the riders interact with their stirrups correctly without the motion of the horse moving beneath them to start. If you don't have access to an equisizer, you can always ask your horse to just stand for you, and you can practice it standing still and maybe have your friend hold them for you and slip your horse a few carrots along the way. And then you can practice standing until you're stable and happy at rest. From there, you can move on to a walk. Holding onto your horn in a Western saddle or a neck strap in an English saddle when you're finding your stability standing is not cheating. It's a bridging step to help you get where you want to be. I will say, if you're using a neck strap or a grab strap, make sure that it is adjusted to the length that your hands naturally hang at while standing. If it's too long, it will not catch you if you start to fall back, and if it's too short, it will pull you forward. Neck straps and grab straps are really, really helpful tools, but they do have to be adjusted correctly for them to help you. Now, here's your instructions on how to stand up in your stirrups. You're going to incline forward from your waist the amount that shifts your weight from your seat bones to your stirrups, making sure to keep your chin up, ribs up, and arms relaxed. Next, you will push off your stirrups to unbend your knee to raise your hips up in air above your knee. In this standing position, you'll rotate your femurs in. You'll roll your thighs in. This will let you grip with your thighs and knees. And when you look down, your toes should be pointing straight and your heels should be slightly down. Now, when standing, if you put your heels down too far, your stirrups will swing in front of you and you will fall back on your butt in the saddle, like when a cartoon character slips on a banana peel. If you come up on your toes, though, your lower leg will swing behind you and you'll fall forward. This is bad. I'd rather you fall safely back in the saddle than land on your horse's neck. Once you're standing up fully and you've rotated your femurs in and turned your toes straight, you're going to take your feet and widen them out, away from the horse from left to right. This widens your base of support and also pulls your stirrup leather or your fender taut and ceases their swinging action. This gives you a stable platform to stand up off of. Remember to push the big toe edge of your foot down into the stirrup to prevent yourself from rolling onto the outside edge of your foot. You always push the big toe part of your foot down. When riders roll onto the outside edge of your foot, that's how they get like ankle pain, foot pain, or pain up the edge of their calf. So if you're ever experiencing that, it means that you've probably pronated onto the outside edge of your foot and broke your skeletal alignment in your lower leg. Once you're walking, the motion of the horse moving out from under you will want to push you back into the saddle. And often riders will then lean forward from their waist to put their shoulders forward and attempt to not fall back. But this makes you fall back more, as when you bend forward from the waist, it pushes your butt back. So if you're standing your walk and you feel yourself falling back in the saddle, press your hips forward like you're pushing your stomach towards the horse's head. This will keep your hips up and over your knees. Honestly, just practicing standing your walk will make a huge difference in your riding. Committing to 10 minutes a ride of standing practice will transform your skill set. And it can always be 10 minutes of short bursts. You do not need to stand for 10 minutes straight, so don't panic. If you then want to branch out into standing your trot and canter, it will be time to start pedaling in your stirrups. By that, I mean absorbing the motion of the horse in your knee and ankle joints. If you try to stand and hold it in the quicker, more disruptive gaits without that absorption portion of your joints, you will forever be wobbling and falling back into the saddle or onto the horse's neck. If you give this rider homework or any of the other things I've ever told you guys to try and have questions, let me know. You can message me on any of my social media platforms or email me at solange@stableriding.us. I'm here to help you. It is literally, actually my job. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at stableriding.us. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Stable Riding. We are here once a month on the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have our own open RSS feed. Just search Stable Riding with Solange in your podcast player, or you can find us on the main Horses in the Morning feed. All riders can be stable riders, and a stable rider makes for a happy horse.